Heather, tell us a little bit about Somerville Media Center. What happens there?
So Somerville Media Center is the oldest public access station in Massachusetts. I think it was founded in 1983 or 82. And it used to be called Somerville Community Access Television. And recently we rebranded to call ourselves Somerville Media Center because I think, you know, following other trends nationally in terms of public access, we've realized that we've had to and want to expand to beyond just television, but also to education and to radio programming. Podcasting right now is really exciting. But definitely the media education piece is really, really, really important because, you know, media literacy is important, being critical about the media. And then also we know how much like media conglomeration is evil. And, you know, we need as many voices as possible. So we're a platform of distribution for folks in the Somerville community. And we're also an education site. And we also provide studio space and equipment for folks.
How did you get involved with Somerville Media Center in the first place?
Yeah, so I was working at an after-school program in the Mystic Housing Development in Somerville, Mass. And I think it was 2011 when the MBTA, which is our local transit authority that we love so much in Boston, is so efficient and runs on time all the time. But they decided that they were going to that they were losing money and they had to cut bus routes to multiple places in Somerville, multiple bus routes in the city, including the only one that goes to and services the housing projects that my kids, you know, lived in. And so they, you know, I went to one of the transportation meetings about this, and on my way out, the kids were like, "Where are you going?" And I was like, "Well, this is a thing that's happening, and this is where I'm going." And a lot of them were really young, but they were like, they got it instantly. They were like, "That's not okay. We can't let that happen. What are we going to do about it?" And I was like, "Well, I'm going to go to this meeting, and that's like one thing we can do, but what else could we do?" And so we kind of thought about, what if we made a video? And so I reached out to Somerville Media Center, and the person who was in my role at that time was like, "Yes, we'll help you. How can we do this?" We planned a whole PSA and an activist video, really talking about how this bus route was a connector, like a vital connector for folks, you know, trying to get out of poverty. And so we talked about that. We made this video, and within a week we were getting contacted by all the local news outlets. We're paying attention, and yeah, within I think about a week or a week and a half, we found out that they were going to not cut any bus routes in Somerville. So it was like an activist project with a video component that like miraculously actually like worked within a week and a half, which is like mind blowing. So anyway, so that was my first like real introduction with Somerville Media Center. And I always tried to build more of a connection between that. I went to grad school, eventually decided, you know, I wanted to continue working in out of school time. And then I saw this opportunity for a job description that I was, again, just made for me, I don't know, to run the youth program at Somerville Media Center and also run the radio station, which I had been doing radio since I was 14. So that was a huge, huge opportunity for me. And I've been there for 2.5 years and I love it.
We're speaking with Heather McCormick from the Somerville Media Center in town for the exciting Alliance for Community Media Northeast Regional Conference, bringing together public access and community media professionals from all over the Northeast. A lot of fun. Can you tell us a little bit about what your typical day is at Boston Free Radio?
Yeah, so Boston Free Radio is a internet, it's a 24/7 streaming internet station, and it operates out of Somerville Media Center. We have about 35 original live shows that we broadcast out of there every week. So everything from like, you know, pop culture to punk shows to debate. And we have a show that's about environmental news and techno combined. So all sorts of really eclectic stuff. And recently, a lot of what my job has been is now helping develop a podcasting program, because we always had a shortage of live radio slots, and also podcasting is obviously, it's exploded as a new media art form. I started doing my own podcast about a year ago, and it was really transformative. I just was, you know, blown away by all the freedom you have when you can curate your own podcast and it's not under FCC rules and regulations, which we love so much. Thank you, FCC. But yeah, so that's been a lot of my work now, is moving towards getting new folks in that maybe can't get a live slot right away, but want to develop an idea for a show or want to develop a podcast. I've been teaching classes to a lot of different community media centers, how to podcast, and then we just started our own podcast studio, so that's been really exciting. We have teenagers that are doing an awesome podcast. Shout out to We're Trying Here Society, which is the name of their podcast. Check it out. And also True. It's a mood. So yeah, that's what we do, and we really work closely with like Emerson College, sends us amazing interns, and then we have like community events, so we go out and do live DJing, we book shows, all of that good stuff.
Exciting. And so did you imagine that you would end up doing this after you got out of school?
No, it's so funny because I had always wanted to be a DJ, a radio DJ. That was like my goal. My mom was a DJ at Emerson College in the early 80s. You know, I grew up around music. I was either going to do that or music journalism. I was sure of it. And I could not afford to go to Emerson when I ended up getting in, but we had no money and there was literally no way to do it. And so I ended up at public school at UMass Amherst, which ended up being a wonderful thing for me. But I was at a public school that didn't really have a strong like radio production program. Like they had a radio station, it was cool, whatever. But I really got into other stuff out there, especially education, media education, all types of just work. I was working in an after-school program at a Boys and Girls Club. I was working in a food pantry and really getting involved in like food justice activism, like drug law reform activism. So I was kind of either in the mindset of I'm going to be an educator or like an activist or an organizer or something like that, and try to combine those things, I guess. And so, you know, that was kind of what I ended up doing when I graduated. Even though I was a communication major, I focused a lot more on like teaching and all of that stuff. So I just thought I would work with young people forever, which I still get to do, which is wonderful. But to do radio as well, which was my first love, is a beautiful full circle kind of experience.
So folks in New York State don't have the luxury that it's not really a luxury. I think it's a basic necessity and a right to access to television and radio for the most part. Massachusetts has got a very strong network based on the old public access contracts, which I assume is still underpinning much of what happens there.
Yeah, except AGITPI wants to get rid of all of those. So the FCC, that's a very important thing for people to know right now, is that those, even in protected states like Massachusetts, those public access is totally under attack.
And that's because the cable franchise fee is under attack.
Yeah.
So what does the future hold? What are you aiming towards in these access organizations as the foundation of support?
I mean, I have to say, I think our education piece is what makes us the most vital and the most relevant. The fact that we teach people how to make, you know, how to do documentary films, how to, you know, do graphic design, how to use cameras, professional, you know, digital photography, that we give folks, and then especially and including young people, the tools to, you know, communicate a message, communicate, you know, an artistic viewpoint, and we give them a platform for it. That's what makes us relevant and makes us, because we're not just a station, we're a community. And I feel like you probably know that a lot here, about that's what needs to be there to be able to sustain it. And I think, you know, the stuff I'm most proud of is probably the youth programming that we run there because of that piece, because young people have a pathway. They can take a class, but then they can become a volunteer. They can become a youth member. They can become a paid intern. You know, they can come to our drop-in nights. They can come to a bad movie night. Like, there's so many different goofy things, but also, like, engaging and fun and youth-directed things that will pull them in. And then they grow up with us, and then they're passionate, creative media producers and not just, you know, passive consumers of media. And I think, you know, every community benefits from that.
How can people find out more about Somerville Media Center?
So you can go to somervillemedia.org, and there's all sorts of menus there for if you want to check out Boston Free Radio. You can go to stream and then click, or you can go to bostonfreeradio.com. The youth media page is somervillemedia.org/youth-media. Check out the stuff we're doing. We have a great playlist on YouTube. You can see some of our youth produced videos and stuff like that. They're pretty fun.
Great. Well, thanks so much for making time in your schedule to come visit us.
Of course. Thank you for having me.